This message comes from NPR sponsor, Mattress Firm. Sleep hot. Mattress Firm's sleep experts can match you with a cooling mattress from the Tempur-Breeze collection from Tempur-Pedic, so you can experience measurably cooler sleep all night. Get matched at Mattress Firm's Memorial Day sale. Sleep at night.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Elise Hu. And all month, we're bringing you special music episodes from the It's Been a Minute vault. This week's musical guest is Syd, formerly known as Syd the Kid. She is a songwriter, producer, and lead singer of the band The Internet. She talked with our former host, Sam Sanders, back in 2018. Syd and her work are basically everywhere. She was featured in Drake's Nice for What video. A couple of her songs were on HBO's Insecure. And her group, The Internet, was nominated for a Grammy for their 2015 album, Ego Death. Syd first came to prominence in Odd Future, the Southern California hip-hop collective that birthed stars like people you've heard of, Frank Ocean. Now you're lost in the heat of it all. Earl Sweatshirt. Something sinister to it. Pendulum swinging slow, a degenerate moving through the city with pressure. And the leader of Odd Future, Tyler the Creator. I said, okay, do get my infatuation and translate into another form of what you call it. In Odd Future's heyday, the group, and especially Tyler the Creator, caught criticism for what some people thought were sexist and homophobic lyrics. And at the middle of it all was Syd. They weren't her lyrics, but she was the only female member of the group. There was media speculation about her own sexuality. And she talks with Sam about how she navigated all that and also discussed the internet's 2018 album, Hive Mind. Now you're wrong, but show you right. Okay, just a warning, we will discuss a vulgar word or two without bleeping it later in this conversation. And here are Sam Sanders and Syd.
You seem very much like a West LA person.
I'm from Midtown.
Where about?
Like Crenshaw and Venice.
Okay. Yeah. I was saying that because so much of the new album gives me this like kind of close to the beach vibe.
I get that. It's a vibey, flowery, kind of breezy.
It's in no hurry.
Yeah.
It's in no rush.
Yeah. That's L.A. for sure.
Right? I like
that. I was talking to somebody about it last night. They were saying they love New York because basically there's always something to do. And I was like, yeah, I get that. she said, like, in L.A., I just feel like I could just sleep all day.
Yeah. Like, this song is not in a hurry.
It's not.
Just, like, vibe. Like, what is the vibe? Describe that vibe.
Well, It gave me a reflective vibe.
I can see that.
You know?
So reflecting on what?
Reflecting on just where we are as a human race.
Do you think that's a good state right now?
I think it's been worse, and I think it's been better.
Yeah?
I just try to look at the bright side. And what we can be grateful for.
Yeah.
And of course, there's always something for us to work on as human beings.
What are you working on right now as a human being?
Being more present.
Yeah.
Because I've suffered from depression and anxiety in the past.
Really?
And I think it's all brought on by either focusing too much on the past or too much on the future. So lately, I've been trying to really just enjoy the moment and not be in a rush.
You made a bunch of music in your parents' house coming up?
Yeah.
When did you start making music?
14, I started just making beats.
With what stuff?
GarageBand.
Wow.
Yeah, I just had like a little MacBook. So I started playing around on there, and then slowly but surely I started buying like equipment to record other people.
Yeah. Were you good at first?
No. I don't know if anybody's really good. There are probably beats that I would look back on and be like, wow, that was fire. But at the time, I thought it was trash.
One song that I'm hearing All the Time is a role in parentheses Burbank Funk.
Yeah.
You know, you're all over KSRW, right?
Really?
Oh my goodness, they're playing this song every 2 hours.
What? That's awesome.
And like, this is one of the tracks on the album that's a little more up-tempo.
Yeah.
But it's still chill.
Yeah.
Which I like.
We were feeling very, what's the word? Righteous that day.
Really?
Yeah.
Explain this to me.
We made this instrumental in Burbank, hence the title.
Yeah.
And it's Patrick pretty much made the whole thing. He came in with this drum loop that he had gotten from a folder that Steve gave him.
And these are both guys in the group.
Yeah.
Okay.
Patrick's the bass player. Steve's the guitar player.
Uh-huh.
And so Patrick came in. He was like, man, I have this bass line to this drum loop. It's been stuck in my head. And he played that. And we were like, yes. We didn't write the song, the lyrics, until we rented this house in Agora Hills.
So y'all are just making music all over the place.
All over the place.
I love that.
Yeah, it was great. It was a good vibe. And just all living there for like a week and
really? Going
to the store, getting groceries for a week. Chris will bake some chicken and Matt will make some pasta and we'll invite a couple friends over and just live for a week. Honestly, for the first 5 days or something, we didn't make any music.
Really?
We just played laser tag and and like listened to music really loud and like it was fire.
So it seems like you all get along pretty well because you're holed up in these houses for weeks at a time. Y'all can just chill and vibe and eat cook and be together.
Yeah, we really, we're really friends in real life. I'm really grateful for that because throughout my whole childhood, I've always been slightly an outcast in a lot of the circles that I have found myself in. Yeah, just slightly. Okay. I'm really shy. I was really shy, so I ate lunch by myself. Mm. But I played basketball.
Okay.
And so, like, I was at the basketball court every day with the boys. So the girls didn't really know me like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then middle school, I started just sitting near, like, the black kids.
Yeah.
Just, that's all I can really say to describe them. I started sitting around the black kids and then playing basketball still, so I knew all the boys.
Mm-hmm.
But I was always really quiet, like nobody really knew me.
Did you want to give off that vibe, or do you think external forces made you quiet?
No, I don't know. I think I'm just really shy.
So there's five people in this group. Seems as if you were not shy around the other members of the group.
Yeah.
How did you get to that place with them, and how did you meet them if you're so shy?
So I met Matt on MySpace.
Whoa!
2008.
Throwback.
Yes, like 2007, 2008.
Who hit up who?
I hit him up.
Why?
He had a group at the time called the Super 3. And so I reached out to him. I was a fan. And I just said, hey, man, like, I really like your music. Your beats are sick. Like, I wish I had a production partner, too, like, you know, because, like, my beats are cool, but there's always something I feel like is missing.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, you don't need nobody. Like, you know, keep working on it. And I was like, okay, cool. A little while later, maybe like a year or two later, I became a part of Odd Future. And he was already a part of Odd Future when I initially hit him up.
So you liked Odd Future as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
I liked the music. It was different. Like the production.
Yeah.
to have some type of knowledge, that is one perception. But knowing you own your opponent is a defeating bonus. I'm Zeus to a Cronus.
It taught me a lot about performing. I had never performed before until I started DJing for them.
How old were you when you began to DJ for them?
18.
How was it?
It was stressful.
Yeah?
Because I didn't know what I was doing. Like, I started DJing 2 months before my first tour.
Okay.
And just, you know, they needed a DJ and they didn't trust anybody. So I would have otherwise just been at home.
You're in this group, this collective, Odd Future, and like a part of whatever that family is. Like, but were you more comfortable in that setting, or were you still kind of outcast, kind of shy in the way that you were in school? Was it different for you?
No, I was still very shy and kind of outcast. I was good at outcasting myself just by being so quiet. You know what I mean?
And you like that?
No, I didn't. I don't know how I feel about it now. Now I don't so much mind because I have good friends. You know, I'm an adult. I've got those friends that I've had for a long time. I've got enough friends.
And they get it.
Yeah. And I got my family. Like, we're good. But growing up, no, it was more of a hindrance than anything.
Being quiet.
Yeah, just being quiet, sometimes being too scared to speak up and ask for things. But I will say that that's the reason why I probably know how to do so many different things.
Because you were quiet?
Yeah, I was too scared to ask somebody else, how do I do this? So I would just go learn, teach myself.
Coming up, more music from Syd and the internet and how she's handled speculation about her sexuality.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Homes.com. Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching, so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive, and it's Name Your Price tool. Say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show coverage options within your budget. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BritBox, helping people discover a world of British TV, including new original drama Time, starring Jodie Whittaker, Tamara Lawrence, and Bella Ramsey. Streaming at BritBox.com/NPR.
Listen to Embedded for moments that stay with you.
I could smell the smoke. I could smell the dust.
Voices that resonate. Stories that change the way you think about your life.
How did we get here?
The Embedded podcast is NPR's home for original documentary series. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
There is this wonderful thing y'all do on the album where, like, these songs will kind of roll into other songs, like, right on the same track.
Yeah.
And I like it.
You're nothing but a moment of fame.
There's this moment where Next Time becomes Humble. Mm-hmm. I want to just play it so our listeners can hear it.
Say hello.
So we're like in one song.
Mm-hmm.
I'm vibing. I'm cool. I'm like in the car with you. Fine. And then I'm like, okay. I'm like, uh-oh. The car turned right. Where are we going?
Yeah.
And then before you know it, it's a different song on the same track.
Yeah.
What are you trying to do there?
For one, I felt like both of these songs weren't strong enough to stand on their own.
Huh.
Let's just put two songs together, you know?
Why not? I'm reading too much into it.
Well, that is kind of why Next Time came after Mood. On the end of Moon, I say, baby, next time I'll bring you flowers, roses, exotic daisies. Next time I take you out, girl, don't you care. So then from there, it's like, okay, next time. Okay, we have a song called Next Time. Let's
and there you go. That,
let's throw that next.
I love it.
Say, baby, don't hate me. Scratch that, you probably gon' hate me. I'll probably drive myself crazy. My mind, the cloud is so lazy. But tell me what you mean.
Do you ever hear from folks who are like, here is the deep thing I got from your music, and you're like, no.
Yeah, for sure. But
what's
like,
the weirdest interpretation of your music that you've heard from a listener or a fan?
Well, I don't think we get anything that's really too weird. I think our music's pretty straightforward.
Okay.
But I think just the general consensus over my career has been, at least with some people, that I'm like really doing this groundbreaking thing by singing songs about women. And that I'm, like, doing it on purpose, and I'm really not, which is great.
Yeah.
You know?
It's just kind of, like, where you're at.
Yeah, I just, I date women, so I'm well, not going to write a song about a man. It just wouldn't be real.
Yeah. You know? Well, and then there are going to be folks that are going to hear you say, I date women, and not be satisfied with that.
Because right.
there have been times where
what
people
do you mean, date?
Exactly.
You don't love women? Like
is there a label on you? Is there a label on this?
Yeah.
People are so, they want a label.
What's your pronoun and all that?
Do you do any of that stuff?
No.
Okay.
I typically just call myself gay.
Okay.
Or Sid. Matt told me this morning, he was like, you're not even gay, you're just Sid, so like, it doesn't even matter. And I was like, cool, that works for me.
Yeah. Well, because there is a certain kind of, the culture, it seems, needs for people that they, that are queer, however you define it, to define it. What is your pronoun? What is it pansexual? Is it bi?
Right.
Is it ambis? This and you, and you and a lot of other folks in Odd Future have been like, F a label.
Mm-hmm.
I like what I like, and if I tell you a bit about it, you'll know, and if I don't, you won't.
Yeah.
Do you get pushback from, I don't know, people in the LGBTQ community over that approach?
In the beginning, I did. Because, you know, Tyler was thought to be homophobic. the group was thought to be homophobic, and people were always questioning how I could be a part of such a group.
You know, I was reading, because you've talked about this before, the Odd Future and the lyrics and how people were dealing with all that. But you said before that, quote, people choose what to get offended by. Why do you think people chose to get offended by some of the lyrics that Tyler was spitting with Odd Future?
Because, you know, a lot of people have experienced hate by way of these words, you know what I mean?
Have you?
Like, no, I've steered clear of it. You know,
how?
Like I've never, no one's ever come yelled, you faggot at me or anything like that. No, I've been very lucky.
I've gotten. I'm trying to think if I ever heard the F word. I think I heard faggot.
Yeah,
I got stares. You know, like you know when you get the stares.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's
I've been very lucky because I think for one, a lot of people. When they see a lot of people that ignorant to have people who are ignorant enough to do that usually think I'm a dude.
How does that feel?
I don't mind it.
Okay.
It's only annoying when they try to tell me that I'm in the wrong restroom.
Then what
like,
do you do?
I tell them to mind their business.
Yeah.
It's cool. You know, I get it. I don't get mad unless they come at me a certain type of way. If it's somebody like, excuse me, you know this is the... I say, yeah, I know. And then, oh, I'm sorry. It's okay. But, for instance, recently I was on a ferry and I was in the restroom. From London to Ireland.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm in the restroom and I come out the stall, I'm washing my hands. Mind you, I've already left the stall and I'm washing my hands.
You're done.
I'm done. Like, this woman comes out of a stall. She says, oh, this is the women's room. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm a woman.
Yeah.
And, like, as I'm leaving the restroom, I'm drying my hands and I'm walking out. Another woman comes, is leaving the restroom, opens the door and points at the sign.
Oh, come on.
And, like, looks
you can't
at
read
me,
the sign.
And I'm like, didn't you just hear me tell this other lady that I'm a woman? Like, mind your business. And it's okay. Like I said, like, I can't be mad at someone for making a mistake. yeah. like that, making an honest mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it gets kind of nasty or
that's not fun.
Suspect, then I'm gonna talk.
You've said before in interviews that your mother wanted two girls. She ended up with you and your brother Taco.
Mm-hmm.
And you say that that disappointed her. That hurt my heart hearing you say that.
You know, I mean, yeah, for sure. When I was like around 18,
yeah.
that's when I kind of started wearing more boys' clothes. And she didn't have a problem with me being gay at all.
Really?
But I think, and I'll let her speak for herself when I get home, but I think that she had built this idea in her head of having two daughters in the future and going shopping with them
yeah.
and dressing them up in girls' clothes when
yeah.
they were younger and stuff, and I was never into that. I mean, now she accepts me for who I am. Like,
aww.
She's like my biggest fan.
Aw.
Yeah.
I love it.
And she's the only one, I think, who's like truly honest with me, too. And I appreciate that because
yeah.
now, you know,
yeah.
sometimes it gets hard to like find somebody who's willing to hurt your feelings.
To help you.
Yeah, to help you.
In a minute, Sid's thoughts on why there are so few women producing and mixing in hip hop today. And the R&B singer she calls to mind.
Support for NPR and the following message come from our sponsor, Whole Foods Market. Host a celebratory brunch for less with 365 by Whole Foods Market, featuring wallet-happy finds like cold smoked Atlantic salmon and more.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Squarespace. Measure your end-to-end online performance with powerful website and seller analytics. Get insights on top traffic sources, understand how your reach is growing, and more. Use code NPR to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. This message comes from NPR sponsor CarMax. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because CarMax believes you shouldn't just settle for a car, you should love your car. That's why every car they sell has CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. Don't settle, find love at first drive. Start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I'm Miles Parks. I cover voting and election security for NPR. Across the NPR network, we report rigorously on the forces seeking to disrupt democracy and provide communities with reliable information. It's Public Media Giving Days, the perfect time to stand with the facts by donating now at donate.npr.org. Thank you.
There are not a lot of women producing R&B or hip-hop or anything in that vein. Did you, like, in your production, in your work, how many times have you crossed paths with another woman, female producer?
I know a few.
Okay.
I know quite a few nowadays.
Yeah?
I run into more songwriters.
Yeah.
That are women. And then I know a couple of female engineers now, too.
Yeah.
I'm trying to advocate for more of that.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff.
Why do you think there's been a lag to get women into the production engineering side, not so much the writing, singing side?
To be honest, I think a lot of it is interest, just general interest. I don't think there's as many women interested in that career path.
Why do you think that is?
Maybe it's a nurturing thing. You know how it is when you grow up not thinking that something is possible because you don't see it
mm-hmm.
as something that's common.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's that. I know my mom wanted to be a producer.
Really?
Yeah, so and I didn't find that out till after I'd already started doing it, but
huh.
I always knew she loved music. And for her, you know, she was just like, yeah, it's a man's industry. And
she would say that?
Well, a man told her that. Like, when she was coming up and, like, she was sitting in on some mixing sessions, she told me that once one of my mentors, actually, he became one of my mentors for a little while later on, but she told me that one time he told her, like, it's a man's industry.
Really?
So, and I don't know if he said that to mean, like, you don't belong or just to say, look, there's mostly men in here.
Yeah.
Just a fact.
Did that make you want to do this more?
No. The driving force behind my desire to make beats is just being able to take credit for fire beats.
I wanted to ask you about your influences, because there are sometimes when I hear you sing and when I hear the songs where I am totally hearing and channeling one musician in particular. Can we hit No?
Baby, don't let me go, baby. Aaliyah.
You know.
I get that a lot. Baby,
don't say no, babe. That sounds like Aaliyah.
Everybody says that. That's crazy.
How do you feel hearing that?
I'm flattered. I love Aaliyah's voice.
Yeah? Were you into her growing up?
Yeah. I got her greatest hit CD from the swap meet when I was a kid, and it's amazing. Like, even her, even her stuff with Genuine, like Final Warning. Yes, the Static Major, background arrangements. Yeah.
Well, and you can hear, so like, she's singing. Besides, I'm saying, Aaliyah, you're singing. The thing that I like about you and Aaliyah is that, like, there can be these moments where you're singing very delicately. But I can still hear that you're in total control of your voice. You know exactly what you're doing. There are some people where they sing a little down because they can't do more, but like you're doing this on purpose, and I can hear it, and it's a I don't know, it just works for me.
Thank you.
I like it.
It's interesting because like I'm not, definitely not the best singer. I started late, and I know a lot of singers who can only do one or the other. Like they either can't use their falsetto or their head voice, or they can't use their chest. I'm better at the delicate stuff.
Yeah. You've talked before about, like, not wanting to be in the spotlight, not wanting even to have, like, pictures taken of yourself sometimes. I forget where it was, but you said, quote, "I think I see myself differently than most people see me. I think everybody, for the most part, struggles with how they see themselves versus how the world perceives them." Explain that.
You know how it is when someone posts a picture of you and you hate it, and you're like, why would you post this?
That's most pictures of myself.
That's me.
Okay.
So
why do you think that is the case?
I think, like I said, I see the perfect version of myself from another angle. I've never been one for attention. Like, I'm not the type to yell in public because don't look at me.
Yeah.
When I'm on stage, it's another story.
Yeah.
When I'm performing.
Yeah. You're a different person, kind of.
Yeah. When I'm like shooting a video or something, I throw this other version of myself. It's still me. It's just a side that's, I don't know, I'm more comfortable with showing to people who care.
Do you have a name for that person?
Mm.
You don't have like a Sasha Fierce going on or something?
I've been called Frisco, the star child.
When you're on stage? Or when you're, like,
mostly
inhabiting?
Mostly just when I'm in my zone.
This episode was originally produced by Kumari Devarajan and edited by Jordana Hochman. Additional production and editing by Barton Girdwood and Kitty Isley. All right, until Friday, thanks for listening, y'all. I'm Elise Hugh. Talk soon.
This message comes from NPR sponsor MassMutual. The Financial Educators Council says 39% of Americans don't have someone to go to for financial advice, but you can plan for the short and long term with someone backed by 170 years of financial expertise at MassMutual.com.
This advertisement comes from our paid sponsor, Fundrise. High interest rates mean that real estate assets are available at a discount compared to previous valuations. The Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to expand its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. Add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio at fundrise.com/NPR. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the fund before investing. Read the prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.